and relevant to their culture. I remember being here about 20 years ago and making a comment in a panel that I was part of and getting blowback from people. And the comment went something like this. Is your church prepared? Are you prepared for a monogamous gay couple to walk into your congregation and sit down and at the end of service say, this is going to be our home church, and will you know how to react with love while still holding to your principles and values? And I will tell you, that has happened to me at least five times that I know of in the last 7 years. And it is happening over and over and over. Now, the reason I brought that up in that culture, that was the world that my children were in as they were kind of lights in a dark world called the public school system. And we believed, and we still believe, in planting families in the public arena. And you're going to hear that a lot from me personally today. Now, in that, what I told them is I said, so my kids, when that's their culture, do not understand why week after week after week people want to talk about a cappella worship. It's a disconnect for them. They sit in classes being told that they're not created. They're being told directly that you're in a cosmic accident. And then they would go into church, and the hottest issue was over order of worship or how we're worshiping. So what happened is, in a lot of ways, many of our churches failed to make the right turns at the right moments. Now, there is something to be said for, we're going to set up the bastion of truth in the middle of this culture and say, we will not change, we will not budge, we will not adapt. Okay, most of the churches doing that, not all, but most of the churches doing that are dying quickly. Now, there are a few that are growing, and why are they growing? Because just like churches that are mega churches growing from absorbing small churches, so are a few of the bastions of conservatism also growing. The smaller churches around them, you know, they close their doors, and people say, I'm going to go to the one true church, and so they're willing to drive a little bit further. So what I want to do is I want to talk about something completely different than that, okay? Not worship wars, you're not going to hear any of that today. Not gender issues, you're not going to hear that today. What I'm going to talk about is imagining brand new a way of thinking. And so I'm going to try and do my best, and I'll give you a handout when we're done so you can think of this. We bought an LA Fitness. We closed on it last February, about, I don't know if that's 14 months ago or whatever. And what we're doing is we are imagining a community center where a church happens to meet. Now, let me explain the difference between a church with a gym and a community center where a church happens to meet. How many of you know a church that has a gym and you ask them, so how often do you use your gym? And they say something like this. Well, after we figured out it took like 6 hours to break it down and set it back up for an hour of basketball, we use it about four times a year, and we have to hire a crew to come do it, to set it up and break it down. I've run into so many churches that imagine we're going to have a play space for the kids inside, and they buy these heavy four-person pews that stack up 10 high, and it's a major project to even get the floor stripped down where you could play one game of basketball. Can I ask you, if you're in real good shape, let's say you're Kevin Durant, how long can you play basketball? An hour, right? And so one youth minister put it this way. He said, we found out that our kids aren't professional athletes. And so if they played hard for 40 minutes, they were passing out. But it took us 4 hours to break the gym down, 6 hours to reset it, and that was for 40 minutes of basketball. We decided it wasn't worth it, so our gym sits unused week after week. So what I'm trying to talk about today is not a church with a gym. So I'm clarifying a little bit about what I'm not going to be talking about so that you understand it. This idea came into my world actually from a missionary that was speaking at Abilene Christian University, and I believe his affiliation was Harding, and so I just want to give that credit. So this missionary is up talking one day, and he says, if I had advice for you young ministers out there, here's a bit of advice. And I thought, okay, I'm going to be a minister in a couple years. And he said something like this, and it sunk in. If I could tell American churches something, is quit naming your buildings by the church name. Because we keep saying that the building's not the church, the church is not the building, and then we put the church name on the building, and we begin to equate immediately the building with the church. And I was sitting there getting confused, like, what else would you call a building? And he said, if I could change anything, I'd give our buildings a name where the church meets. And that way, if the church moves or sells that building, it doesn't indicate that the church shut its doors. It's just changing locations. In recent years, we've seen a lot of church plants that have welcomed the idea of renting facilities and not even owning facilities. And they've been renting facilities that are well known to their community. Probably the most famous in recent years is Ethos in Nashville, that hosts a worship service in one of the most famous dance hall bars in the city of Nashville called The Cannery, right? Have any of you been to The Cannery? Okay. Yeah, you walk in The Cannery. It is well known. If you're in Nashville and you say, hey, man, you ought to come visit my church. Well, you haven't got a church building? There's so many church buildings in Nashville. Yeah, we don't meet in a church building. We meet at The Cannery. Really? You meet at The Cannery? Is the bar open on Sunday morning? Which, by the way, it's not. But everybody knows that space. So church planters have known for a long time, yeah, we meet in the high school, or we meet in the convention center, or we meet in this hotel. And even the International Churches of Christ, formerly known as the Boston Movement, they also got the value of this. They didn't own buildings on purpose. Why? They wanted to meet in facilities that were common space to the community. So they would rent hotel ballrooms for their worship services. And it became a way to invite people in. Imagine, though, if you were not only renting that facility, you also happen to own it. Because everybody I know who's renting a facility, in their quiet moments, after those long setup and breakdown moments, they dream of owning a facility that they can control the schedule of. Even Ethos has had to really strategize around that. What do we do during the holiday season when the country and Western world is booking The Cannery almost nonstop? So they meet in their homes, which has worked great for them, but it doesn't work for every church. So we began to imagine this idea of a community life center, and that name comes from our purpose statement, which is transforming life and transforming community. So what would you name a space that a church owned that has said, that's what we're going to do? So what we're doing is we are imagining what happens if, first of all, the church were generous to the community with its space. You know what I've discovered about nonprofits that are not churches? They're dying for space. They're dying for it. One nonprofit that I talked to, I said, so you guys do an annual fundraiser at the convention center. Why do you do that at convention center? Because we need to be able to sit 500 people around round tables. What does that run you to do that? Well, we have to rent it for the whole day and cater it and everything. It probably costs us about 10 grand. How much do you raise at that dinner? Well, net, we usually walk away with about $8,000 or $9,000. So they're spending that kind of money because there's no other place that they can use. Over and over and over, there are all kinds of nonprofits in your community that are Christian and faith-based that are desperate for space and are having to rent it and pay for it, and it is undercutting what they're doing. So we began to ask, what does this look like? Now, I want to tell you the story. Let's pause that button. Got a 116-year-old church, and about 11 or 12 years ago, completely separate, starts to rise up a brand new nonprofit in Seattle. It's a group of doctors and nurses that begin to ask this question. How could we figure it out where we could take our skills and help these people who cannot afford any health insurance, they can't afford a deductible, They can't even afford their copay most of the time. And as a Christian, I want to give my skills to them while not jeopardizing my license. Because that's a big deal. If you're a doctor, you just can't walk over to somebody's house and take out your bag and start treating them anymore, right? There's all kinds of malpractice there. So if you're in the modern American system and you want to donate your skills as a doctor or a dentist, you have to figure out a legal way to do that that doesn't jeopardize your very license. So these nurses, doctors all got together and they began to dream of a mobile medical clinic. So our church happened to be one of the churches that had a nurse that was there. We had a group of nurses, but there was one lead nurse who had begun to explore the idea of a parish nurse or a located church nurse in our language. We don't call our churches parish, right? And so it was this idea, what if you had a medical ministry that the nurses at the church actually did things like check blood pressure, teach people how not to fall, made sure that elderly people got the right kind of walker, and we were coming alongside them, not for pay, but because we love them. And so as they began to unfold this, they were meeting at this church called Howler Lake, and they started this thing called Howler Lake Christian Clinic. And what you see up there is PSCC, Puget Sound Christian Clinic, because they figured out that Howler Lake was too small of a regional area, that they are really wanting to work with Puget Sound. And guess what they found when they put word out among doctors and nurses that they were trying to do this? Anybody want to take a guess? All kinds of Christian doctors and nurses were saying, I want to have a place to, by faith, not for pay, donate my skills and my time. So they found a church, a little tiny church, that has about 17,000 square feet. We have about 18,000 square feet in our current facility. And they began to get a classroom here, and they bought a semi, and they tricked out the entire back of that semi as a mobile medical clinic and started finding churches where they could park it once, twice, three, four times a month, and have doctors and nurses come and provide full medical care on site at these churches for the least of these. Our church happened to be one of those. So in that, you began to train pastoral staff to provide pastoral care. And all of a sudden, we began to meet people that were not there to say, hey, you know, you guys got a benevolent fund. I need to buy groceries. And that conversation always starts the same way. Those of you who are pastors know this, is, I need to meet with somebody for prayer. We would love to pray with you, but we need to ask you the question, are you here for benevolent help? We do have that. No, no, no. Don't need benevolent help. I just need to pray. And then you have this hour-long prayer, and then they say, now I wanted to talk to you about some of my bills. And then you're like, okay, our pastoral care guy does that. I wish you'd told me up front. So we were meeting tons of people off the street. But what we discovered when we began working with Puget Sound Christian Clinic are people that if they didn't get help would become the people on the street. Their children, their husbands, their wives, their moms, or their dads were in a medical situation with no safety net, no way for help, that if they walked into the hospital one time, it would be the financial undoing of the entire family system. And we began to meet especially French-speaking Africans who had come to America seeking political asylum. And if you don't understand, let me just tell you, I can't say I'm unashamed about this right now because of the politics in the air. But for life, I've been a pretty right-wing conservative Republican, okay? I won't say anything about politics right now, my disappointment in everything, but there we have it. But I want to say that America needs to understand the dynamics of immigration and the complexities of it more than we possibly think right now. These people that we're meeting that are trying to get their papers, we have, for example, here's two girls got scholarships to the University of Washington. They move here from Africa. Their parents are pretty important people in a nation in Africa. They get over, they finish most of their freshman year when mom and dad call and say, you need to know something. We are under physical threat because of our political position. The other party has gained, and when they say party, it's not fun. the other tribal leaders have taken over. Our family is in physical threat on a daily basis. The money, the monetary system has completely changed. Any money you have from us means nothing anymore. It's been devalued. Find a way to survive in America. And whatever you do, don't come home. Those two girls eventually, after 3 months, one of them ends up with a physical ailment where she has to find help. And they're in Goodwill one day, and they just ask the question, does anybody know any place to go? They said, yeah, there's this church down there that hosts this mobile medical clinic. They'll give you free medical care. They have come and become part of the fabric of our church. They now live with one of our former elders' wives, widow. And they live with her and take care of her home for her. She takes care of them. And they've just gotten their work papers where they can do it. And it's taken them 2.5 years with complete legitimacy, with complete support of a Christian community, being at church every single week just to get work permits. Nothing to say about legal standing in the United States of America. That's what people are facing. The rhetoric of the church about illegal immigration and immigration and refugees has got to change now. These people are going to end up on the streets if we don't do something. So our church began to imagine, what if we got in on the front end of homelessness where we're proactive rather than reactive? So imagine then, we're trying to figure out, we got 17,000 square feet of usable 1950 church space that cannot be modified in a city that says no growth. And we began hunting for a different space. Actually, that church had been looking for about 30 years for a different space. I just happened to be there for the last 7. And a couple years ago, this LA Fitness came up for sale. And our executive pastor noticed it. He called up. They said, actually, it's already kind of, we've got an agreement on the table. And our lawyers got in there and they at least said, let's do a silent auction. We lost the auction. So we put our bid in. We missed it by $70,000. It was sold to a guy who has never since 1965 sold a single property he has bought to develop. He buys properties. He develops them into apartment complexes. He does very well in Canada and North America. So our lawyer said, look, here's what I'll do. We get that you guys want that facility. When it posts and we find out who bought it, because it takes 30 days for that to post publicly, we'll call their office and say, we are still interested in the property. And so our realtor ends up calling their office and gets a hold of their legal department. And the legal department guy ends up hanging up on him. He's so angry at the conversation. Because our realtor's like, hey, this church is really interested in that property. They want to buy it. We don't sell properties. Mr. Widener's never sold a single property. He's not going to talk to you. And we keep coming back at him, until eventually the lawyer says, fine, I'll blankety blank tell the executive. And it just hangs up on him. He walks down the hall in anger. We got this story back channel. He walks in the hall down in anger and goes to kind of the least of the executive committee at Widener's Place and says, some church is still interested in buying that LA Fitness we bought. I told them we don't do that. And the committee member goes, isn't that funny? When we took a tour of that building, Mr. Widener made a comment that this would make a great church. I think I'll pass that on to him. What was big is at that point, that was we had put a fleece out before the Lord to pray January through August. And if God did not make it clear for us to move, we would just remodel our current property and do what we could do. We wanted Him to make it very clear. On July 1st of that year, the elders stood up in front of the church and said, we need to tell you, we had a buyer that cannot make a full price offer, and the last facility that we had on our look list fell through. We have no potential buyer. We have no potential property. And 1 month from now, we're going to be locked into what we're doing and the direction we're going. So pray, pray, pray. On July 28th, that same month, they stood up and said, we cannot tell you how excited we are to tell you. We have a full price cash offer on this building from a brand new buyer. And Mr. Widener, who's never sold a single property in his entire career, has agreed to sell us the property that we wanted. And that started a journey about asking, what are you going to do with this new space? Okay? Now, most churches build a building to do what? Worship. Because our number one measurable metric of success is attendance on Sunday morning. Do you know that Andy Stanley and Craig Rochelle earlier this year removed from their measurables of engagement Sunday morning attendance permanently? They will no longer measure engagement at two of the largest churches in the world using Sunday morning attendance as a factor ever again. Because the culture has changed so much that committed members at those two burgeoning churches, if you're a committed member, they take the high committed members and they say, how often do you attend? They attend 1.7 times a month. So if you're using that as your measure of spirituality, then what you do is you walk away saying, our people are not really disciples of Christ. But what they began to find is that people, when you talked about ministry during the week, you talked about engaging through home groups, you talked about involving people in community outside of Sunday morning, they found that these people who are attending 1.7 times a month were actually very engaged in other spaces during the week. And so they changed their metrics to measure. They all have different measurables that they come up with, and that's what we're trying to do in our setting. What is it that we're doing with our facility, and how is it that we'll prevent ourselves from becoming a place, well, that's standard? So we have Puget Sound Christian Clinic that is a great partner, and we told them we're going to relocate our church, and their first reaction is, we don't think that we will go with you. We already drive our medical clinic to places up there, and so we don't need another church up there to host it. And we were very sad. We went back to them and said, no, we were thinking a little bit bigger than that. And they said, what did you have in mind? We said, well, back of house on the top floor, which is the top space of, if you can imagine, five racquetball courts, and if you cut them in half, the top half of that, we can't afford to develop that space out, so we don't want to just have it sit. And we thought maybe you guys could raise money to finish it out, and you guys could do something with that space. And they said, so you're talking about letting us, if we could build it, we could, I mean, you'd own the building, but we could stay there for free and operate? We're like, yes. So they did the math and figured out that instead of costing them, we have a friend who built a dental clinic about the same size that ran roughly $3.5 million, that for $600,000, they could build a full dental clinic in our space. And for the first time in the history of that organization, others, that a fixed site clinic could be financially feasible. So they came in, they began to raise money for it, and it was going to cost $600,000. They raised about $250,000, $270,000, and then they began to go and tell that story over and over and over to every organization they could tell their story to. We're trying to build a dental clinic. Their current dental clinic can do about 150 dental visits a year. They imagined that if in a fixed site place like we were offering them, that they could take from 150 to 3,000 dental visits a year, and on top of that, do the 2,000 to 3,000 medical visits a year in the mobile clinic outside in the front patio. So we were excited about this partnership, but they had to find financial partners to help finish this church building. So one of the places that they pitched was the Boeing Employees Association. Some of you know Boeing's a big deal up in Seattle. And they went in because they knew that Boeing regularly gave $15,000 to $50,000. They had this one organization like 10 or 15 years ago got a $50,000 grant. But most organizations, if it's legit, could get $15,000. So they went and they made the pitch. Here's what we're talking about. A free clinic, dental clinic, with five operatories where people could come in and get real dental care. They could get mental health counseling, and they could use the mobile medical clinic. Here's what we're pitching. We just need $320,000 more to make this happen. We're asking if you guys would give us one of your grants. So they were excused from that meeting. The Boeing Employees Group met and came back and said, we believe in what you're doing so much, we're going to give you $280,000 of Boeing employees money to finish that clinic in that church. Here's how it translated for our church. We had three tables at the fundraiser where that was announced. Everybody who's who in that community was in that room in the downtown Linwood Convention Center that day. And our name was mentioned no less than 20 times. And our leadership sat there as white as a ghost. And I got done. I said, isn't this, you know me, those of you who know me, I'm like, I'm excited if I get to chew gum, right? I'm like, that's so exciting. People are mentioning our name. And there's two of these leaders that are just white. And I'm like, what's wrong? They said, I didn't get it. The whole community knows about what we're doing. They mentioned our name 20 times. The dignitaries of the city were mentioning our name. I was like, yeah, isn't that cool? And they said, we have to follow through. Because now they're depending on us like nobody's business. So now the pressure is on. So what we began to do is look at all different kinds of things. Who's looking for space? Puget Sound Christian Clinic is our primary partner, which will draw in a year 5,000, 6,000 families seeking dental and medical help. And it will have a churn of about 350 to 400 people per week in the new facility. We also discovered that Young Life cannot stand to meet in churches. Young Life will tell you if they meet in a church, they lose 30% right off the top. That's why they seek neutral sites. They said, if you would name your facility a neutral site like you're talking about, we could use your site with freedom and we wouldn't lose those kids. So imagine that people get to know this facility not as the Northwest Church, but as the Community Life Center. So I went to their Edmonds Community College pitch party. They were having a pitch party for me, and I showed up and say, here's our pitch, here's what we're dreaming of, and I wonder if you guys, if we did this, would you guys be willing to use our facility for free? We just want to grant it for you and everything. And one of the kids said that. He goes, you know how CenturyLink Stadium, we all call it the clink up there? I was like, yeah. And they go, well, yours is the Community Life Center, right? And I said, yeah. He said, we'll probably put on T-shirts, come meet us at the click. And they just started taking off with it, and I'm going to come back to all this later. So they get really excited about having a space that they could use for free because they spend a couple thousand dollars just for the space for Young Life to raise money for that great work that they do. And all these organizations, by the way, do what they do better than any church I know. Here's one of my key learning points. We don't need to do everything. We need to find people who do it well and join with them. And come underneath them and support them. So we started looking at that. We also, one of our business leaders said, do you know that the fastest growing segment of workers in America are mobile business workers who have no office space? I said, actually, I didn't know that. He said, yeah, that's how companies are becoming leaner and meaner. If you don't need an office, they don't give you an office. They tell you to work from home. But he said, he was doing it at the time. He said, you know what the problem is? Try having a business meeting in your home when the kids are running by and asking dad for this, that, and the other. So nobody, and it feels awkward. You say, yeah, I'd love to meet with you about our organization. Say, well, where should we meet? And if you say, in my living room, all of a sudden people are like, it's kind of weird. I don't know that I want to know you that well, right? It's too intimate. So where do they end up? Hotel, coffee shops, Starbucks, all the. How many of you have tried to have a meeting in Starbucks? And what'd you say? I'm sorry, say that again. You're competing with so many things. He said, if we could have a space in this where people could come and get quality coffee and connect and compute, imagine how many people of the mobile business community, we could get to know the entrepreneurs, not just the least of these. And if we could marry those two, if we could take the refugees, for example, that are seeking asylum and put them in direct contact with the entrepreneurs, what might happen? Here's an example about a gal. I was telling the story to some people earlier today. I meet this gal. She's come to us through the clinic. She had two beautiful daughters. She's seeking political asylum in America. And a few of the workers who know her are all excited because she got a job working at like Ross. You know, she got a job. And they're all excited. And I'm talking to her. And she's not very excited about Ross. And I'm like, I heard you got a job. And she's like, yeah, I got a job. I'm starting this week. And I think, well, you know, I don't think she's lazy. And so I finally asked her, I said, you seem a little bit withheld. And she said, well, in my nation, before I sought political asylum and escaped, you would have known me as the Secretary of State. And I'm just sitting there going, I have the Secretary of State of a nation sitting behind me on Sunday morning, and we've been categorizing her because of her American lack of status. And this has played out over and over and over in our communities. People that have gone from the equivalent of master's degree and PhDs that are getting part-time jobs at Ross, Dress for Less, because that's all they're allowed by our government to get. Minimum wage jobs for temporary hire. So these people are coming to our shores, and by the way, we need them. We cannot sustain our own retirement system. Everybody knows that. We either got to have more babies, which isn't going to happen, or we got to have more immigrants. And they're coming to our shores, and guess what? Most of them are either searching for faith or they have amazingly great faith. And I'm talking about faith in God, not governments. And we come alongside them, and we find that they're so impressive. I don't know what happened to my signal there. Can you check your... Oh, is it back up? Oh, well. I'll just go without it. Here we go. So what we're doing is we found that the business workers need a place to come and be. And we began to ask over and over and over, who does what we're wanting to do really well? Young Life does well. You know what? We started interviewing people about leagues, about kids' sports leagues. And you know what we found out from people? They said, I hate going to private gyms with my kid. Because when you go to a private gym, like at a church or a private school for your kid to play, there's no place to watch the game. So you stand up against the basketball court and you just hope that they don't pass the ball really hard your direction. And so we already knew we were going to keep the gym floor. But that led to the question is, why don't we keep the balcony so that parents could be up there and watch the game from up above, and we would become one of the premier sites for people to want to be for these leagues that are going on. Celebrate recovery in your community. They need places to meet. And then we accidentally ran into something that I want to just tell you about. Thank you. That I want to tell you about that blew us away. And this happened just a few months ago. One of our seniors is in a jazz ensemble at his high school. And he invited me to come hear his jazz ensemble. It's a 5-6 member jazz ensemble down on the waterfront in Edmonds. So I go down there one Sunday afternoon, and they were amazing musicians playing to 5 parents and 1 pastor. The 5 parents were sitting there doing what you expect parents who are being dragged to concert after concert after concert. They're yawning, going, yeah, we've heard these numbers before. The pastor there sitting there going, these kids need an audience. And I was like, I can't give them much, but I can give them an audience. I've got an audience looking for something to do that's wholesome on Friday nights. So I grabbed that school ensemble and I said, what if we gave you an audience on a Friday night? And you guys come down and he's doing the thing. Well, you know we don't do church music. I said, we don't want church music. We want your jazz music. I want to convert our auditorium into a jazz club for a night. So here come these 5 high school, 6 high school kids, and they come in, they set up their jazz instruments, and we reconfigure our auditorium. And we had 95 people show with very little advertisement. And what we did is I had to get up and explain how a jazz club works, because most church people don't know how jazz clubs work. I said, okay, so you're in a jazz club, you cannot smoke, all right? And there's no alcohol. So separate that. Here's our deal. We have Italian sodas being served. We have hot coffee. We have tea. We have desserts back there. We've set up little pockets all around this auditorium. Jazz musicians love it when you talk while they play. But here's 2 things you need to know. When they do a solo, and most songs have like 5 or 6 solos in them, at the end of each solo, and then go back to your conversation. That's what they're after. They're low-key. They're casual. They want you to be casual. Our church So we got it all set up. One of the early arrivals came up to me and said, no, we're doing a fundraiser for the school, aren't we? Isn't that what this is? And I was like, oh, we hadn't even thought about that. Well, could I give some money? These are good kids. I want to support what they're doing. So I said, hey, it turns out this is going to be a fundraiser for the school. Once we clear dessert costs, everything goes to the band. The band walked away with $500 that night. And I asked him, I said, is that okay? I mean, I feel bad. We didn't really talk about giving you anything. And one of the guys laughed. He said, our best fundraiser before tonight, we got paid $20 for a gig. And he said, we can't believe it. And we had so much fun. So we're excited about Jazz Nights. Here's the point. All around you in your community are community nonprofits and organizations doing good things that are looking for a place to use what they do. And the church should be a place that finds the image of God that's been imprinted in all kinds of skills and talents and abilities, and find a way to become a hub of humanity in the midst of our cities and our communities where people are there. It's not that you have a gym. It's that you have a space where you tell people in your community, this is a hub of humanity. Now, we got lucky that we secured an LA Fitness that everyone in our community knows about. So we told people, we can't keep the pool. I'm a swimmer, so I grieved over that. But we can keep the gym and we can keep the yoga floor. It's going to be the coolest student center you've ever seen because they got a full-blown yoga floor. We picked a neutral name so that people felt comfortable coming there, and it's in a central location. And our concern is that attendance Monday through Saturday far exceeds Sunday morning attendance. People come and say, so are you guys going to have the gym open once a week? And what I tell them is that once a week on Saturday night, we will have a team who resets the gym for this really odd, bizarre thing called worship. And on Sunday morning, after we're done with that odd, bizarre thing called worship, we will return the gym floor to its purpose. You see how that switched? It's complete backward thinking from most churches. I got asked by one of our elders, it was so cute, this last week. If you're listening to this later, don't get mad at me for telling you a story. He said, do we have a crew identified yet that's going to do this setup and breakdown? And I said, yes, we do. And he said, I'm relieved. And I said, great. And I said, why are you relieved? And he said, because I was concerned, and I just finished the sentence, that you were part of my crew. And he said, yes. And I said, you are part of my crew. I have a crew of 350 people that I've learned from Ethos. I've learned from looking at different churches around. That a church, if you buy the right kinds of chairs intended to maximize the use of a space, an entire auditorium for 700 can be broken down and put away in 17 minutes. But you know what you have to do? You have to make the comfort of the chair not your biggest priority for the kingdom. I like the way one of our teenagers put it. About a year and a half ago when we were envisioning this, one of our teenagers wrote this on a survey and put it anonymous. I think I know who it was, but they just put their age. And they said, I believe in my lifetime, the practice of Christianity and most faith in America will become illegal. And we will certainly lose nonprofit status. And wouldn't it be beautiful that when churches are being shut down, the community you're in comes to your defense and say, you shut down other churches, you can't shut that church down because of what it will do to the community. It's not just asking, if you shut your church down, would anybody notice? It's asking, if the government tried to shut your church down, would the community rise up in arms and say, not this church? In Ethiopia, several years ago, they required that churches have a social justice aspect to have the right to exist in Ethiopia. Imagine how that would revolutionize American churches. And we got about the business of the kingdom. So we're imagining after school CPR, which is care, play, and read with children. We're moving to a high immigrant level. Parent-friendly, ADA, and LEAD. Those of you who know what LEAD is. Business is welcome. Homeless, we're wanting to give them the dignity of a shower. People say, why are we wasting money on three showers in our facility? Is it because people are going to play basketball? I said, no. Because when homeless people walk in here to visit the clinic, I would love to give them the dignity of cleanliness. So many of them cannot find a place to get clean. Imagine that we're that place. Young Life, music and arts. I have a wall that's as long as this auditorium that has nothing. They said, we don't know what to do with this wall. It's just blank. And I said, you know how many Christian artists I know that never have a place to display their their work. I would love every month to have a different artist up on that wall and let them have it as a gallery, if you will. Fly them in. Let them tell the story of their art that they do. Be league friendly. I'm going to skip burst retreat. That's fun. If any of you are into athletics and high interval training, you'd like an idea for a different kind of retreat, I can tell you that after because I'm running out of time. In a place that you can and will give back. An entrepreneur that comes and has coffee and computes and can print at our design print center, that's a whole nother model. It's where you have a print center where professionals can print as quality materials as you can get. It can actually fund the church's printing and then some. So we already own that. We're installing that. Those entrepreneurs are going to ask this question. Is there a way I can give back? And we're going to say, yeah. You know, at 2 o'clock, this same room is filled with kids who need to learn English. And the best way to learn English is just to read. If you'd come in here and love on them and read, we'll pay for your screening. We'll get your background taken care of. And you can come back and give. It'll be a great way. It also compromised the way that we built. We decided to do a lot of internal garage doors instead of expensive dividers. When our architect finally believed that we weren't building a church, we were building a facility for multi-use, he goes, so you guys are serious? I could use like industrial garage doors inside? We're like, oh man, what a great idea. So throughout, we have the ability with the touch of a button to open a space, to more space because of it. The offices, my office is about to shrink by half, and I'm going to be in a LA Fitness sales office designed to sell somebody a health membership. Why? Because we'd rather invest our money in the community than in what we call executive offices. That's kind of a thing of the past. Our foyer, I'm really excited about. Our entire church auditorium is 3,600 square feet. Our new foyer is going to be 4,000 square feet. So for the first time, we're going to be able to breathe a little bit. And we have, because we have great weather in Seattle, it's just raining all the time. We have two massive garage doors that will make it an open-air facility about 65% of the year. The most churchy looking thing is going to be at the end of that foyer, and it's a water feature that is also our baptistry. It'll be a flowing fountain that people walk in. Some of them will recognize the cross, but most won't. But most of them will say, isn't it kind of weird to have a fountain in a church lobby? And we'll be able to tell them, there's actually a story behind that. We'd love to share with you someday. An aerial view of that, it's going to look like that. So here's what's most exciting about the whole thing. As I swim in the pool Monday through Friday, I meet different people in the community, and people are asking, who are you? I'm Chris. You know, what do you do? I'm a pastor. Oh, where do you pastor? Well, actually, we bought the old LA Fitness where you used to work out. Oh, I've heard about your church. Well, what have you heard? I've heard you guys are going to start providing dental care for the people that have no, and you do medical insurance? Yeah. And I've heard that I can come in there and I can do mobile computing? Yeah. And you guys can do leagues? Yeah. Yeah, I just couldn't believe it when I heard that, but I've been telling my friends about it. I never thought I would be in a place where the world started to tell the church's story. But churches, let me tell you, that's what's happening. And I don't tell you this to say anything that, hey, we're doing this right. What I'm telling you is pretty interesting that we've learned. We're one of less than 10 churches accepting this model right now. As best we can tell, we're sixth in the queue nationwide. But Solomon Foundation, that funds church plants for the Christian church, just had their annual meeting with their church planners. And one of our former presence of college and former preacher, he's in his late 70s. He attended with him as a guest. And this is what he told me. It's the last thing I'll tell you today. He said it was fascinating to hear all these 25 to 35-year-old church planters saying, you know what we've decided we're going to do? And he said, and then they began to say exactly what we're about to do and open up in less than 2 months. Churches that want to stay relevant have got to figure out better ways to make these amazing facilities we own a place where the community wants to be, not just a place they feel like they're invited to be. Does that make sense? God bless. If you have any other questions, I'm going to let this just run. Several pictures are going to go, and then if you have questions. Oh, and I have handouts for you. And I apologize for these handouts. These are handouts. We could not modify. It's been crazy. I know you'll understand that. These were actually given for people who said, we want to participate by giving. And so there is an ask in them. However, let me just say this. If any of you have $1.4 million, that's all we lack. No, on a serious note, if you believe in something like this, what we are asking people for is a one-time offering. We're not asking you to sign up forever. But if you did, that'd be a blessing. If you have any questions, I'll be up here. And thank you for your time. And I have some cards over there if you'd like to get the cards. And God bless. Have a great rest of the week.